You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Welcome to our Halloween episode of Screen Heroes, where we're not talking about anything Halloween related, and it's just me being a weirdo. Hi, I'm Ray. And like I said, this is Screen Heroes. I am with my two very handsome and not spooky at all co-hosts, Ryan.
Hi. That was weird. That was very spooky. Oh, I was just getting into the spirit.
Yeah. Totally, Derek.
Happy Halloween.
Hi.
It's not Halloween yet.
It's almost Halloween. Look, we record the day before Halloween, and the episode releases the day after Halloween.
Right, so there's no
Halloween
way.
Halloween does not exist to us.
Which is unfortunate, because it's one of my favorite holidays. It's my favorite holiday. It just is.
Yeah.
So.
It's a good holiday.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, happy Halloween, everybody.
Yeah. Happy Halloween.
All right, now that that's taken care of. So tonight we are talking about season 3 of Daredevil. We usually review the MCU Netflix shows. This one's no different. I hope you were able to binge it in the last 2 weeks. That's not really binging. So I hope
we gave you extra time.
Yeah, I hope you took your time and you really absorbed it all and you're ready for a decent conversation.
Nope.
No?
Not I mean, even. I am ready for a decent conversation, but no, I did not take my time. No, I burned through that thing as fast as I could.
We got through pretty quick.
We did.
I could have talked about it last week.
We actually could have as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We didn't finish it all like on Friday, Saturday, but we finished it by Monday night.
Yeah.
So, nice. Pretty quick. You know, we had some other stuff sprinkled in there, but, you know. But before we do that, we have news.
Of course. So, box office is the same as last week. Halloween first. Stars Born second, Venom is third. I imagine this
weekend. It crossed
weekend,
500 million, I think. Didn't
yes.
It did.
It's huge. It's got all the records for.
So many memes coming out about it.
I'm good with it. Like, I kind of enjoy all the memes about Eddie and Venom being like besties.
Bros. Yeah.
I think it's cute.
It's a little weird because, I mean, that's not quite how it goes in the comics,
no,
but,
not
you know,
even
it's interesting. They definitely did that in the movie, so it's fine. Yeah. I get it, but.
It's not like a kindergartner takes one louse from their head and they're like, you're my buddy now.
Yeah, we're best friends.
But whatever.
I like that it's doing well. I like that people are enjoying it because it's a different kind of superhero movie than we've had in the last decade, really. And so I appreciate that something different is still successful. So.
Like, I just wish they would have went balls to the wall, rated R horror film with it, because that's how it kind of should have been. And I think it ended up being an accidental comedy, and that's why people are flocking to it.
See, I don't think it was an accident. I really don't. I think they knew exactly what they were making.
Based on the trailers, you're wrong. But
trailers can mean lots of different things, right? I mean,
different companies make the trailers usually.
Talked about it before. There were two main trailers for White House Down, and they are completely different movies,
right?
So just, you know, the trailer doesn't tell us very much in a lot of films. I mean. You know, there's plenty, Rogue One, Justice League, where the trailers, that content barely even makes it into the movie, right? So I really think that they knew what they were making.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, all we have to go off of is speculation based on what we know of the movie industry. And we tend to know a little bit more than the average Joe, but at the same time, it's not like we're going to get that interview anytime soon with the makers of the film. So
no.
This is what we're going off of.
Yes.
What's up first on news, guys?
Well, let's see. So, Echo Station, our sister Star Wars podcast, talks about this in detail, so we won't go into too much, but they have announced officially, Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy, that the Boba Fett film is shelved, canned, canceled, not happening, and instead they're going to be focusing on The Mandalorian, which is Jon Favreau's show that will be premiering on the Disney streaming service, which means no sooner than late 2019, but probably 2020 is more realistic for that. So that's happening.
Yeah.
Don't know if you guys have any opinions about
that. I'm okay with that. I thought Boba Fett was overrated since the beginning, so
yeah.
I'd rather see an Obi-Wan or a Yoda movie any day of the week than Boba Fett. I like Mandalorians, you know, but Boba Fett as a character was not really that exciting. So I'm more excited about the Mandalorian show than I would have been about a Boba Fett movie.
Yeah, and I definitely think it might have been overkill to try and do both anyway,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's such a thing as too much Mandalorian.
Yeah, So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you know, we talked about all the shows that Star Trek is coming up with, and same with Star Wars, any of their content now, I'm always curious about the time period. You know, where does this take place? Same with The Mandalorian, because, you know, you could go really far back, you could go far forward.
Didn't they say what the time period
was? Yeah, it's only about 3 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, so it's kind of between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
So, yeah, the Empire is, I assume, still in the process of collapsing. You know, it's a pretty big empire. I don't think it's an overnight kind of thing. So it takes place right after Return of the Jedi.
We're not lucky enough to have it be in the Old Republic era. So.
Sorry, Ryan. So speaking of Star Trek, there's a little bit of news there that we covered on Red Shirts and Runabouts. Yeah. If you want to listen to that, there's a new Star Trek show called Lower Decks that was announced. It's a half-hour animated comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go listen to that episode if you want to hear more about what's going on with that.
There is potential for a Legend of Zelda cartoon in the wake of the Castlevania popularity on Netflix. So that's been optioned a couple times. The first cartoon did very poorly. Nobody really liked it. But it seems that with the popularity of Breath of the Wild, it could have potential.
Well, and this is actually coming from the producer of the Castlevania show, which, you know, from, I haven't watched season two. Season one was really good. And people are basically saying it's the best video game adaptation that exists, which I'm not, and then maybe there's not a lot of competition.
Right. Well, Doom was pretty good. With the Rock.
With the first person scene and everything. Sure.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Best movie ever.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of cool that that's something that might be happening. I'm a huge Zelda fan, especially if they focus maybe on the Breath of the Wild stuff, since that's the popular game right now. That could be pretty cool.
It's very pretty, so I just wanted to see more of it. That was a fun video game to just kind of take in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're rebooting Pirates of the Caribbean.
Without Johnny Depp. Surprising, really, not that many
Get
people.
Get him out of media. Please.
Yes, I agree.
He was good. He's ceased to be good.
It's a talent thing. It's also, you know, the whole he's abusive thing. And I'm not saying that people don't deserve second chances after they make mistakes. Far from it. But, like, you didn't even have to pay for the mistake. So, maybe... maybe you should take some time away.
Why would he do that?
There's
so many Tim Burtons out there that need him for movies.
Oh my god, it's so true.
And we are five or six movies into this franchise at this point. It's probably time to move on.
They're stale. Each one does worse at the box office now. Starting with three. Two did better because of how good one was. But right. Three did poorly. Four and five did worse than the previous one. So I think it's just time to follow something else.
Like, maybe we could just put it out to pasture completely. That's instead of rebooting true. It. Because, you know, why reboot something when the movie just came out? You know?
Yeah, that's the unfortunate.
Give it some time.
It's the unfortunate landscape that we're in.
I think they created a wonderful little world there, and it would be fun to explore some other characters, but I'm exhausted with it. Thoroughly exhausted. And I love fantasy films, so that kind of hurts to say. I'm done, like...
It's certainly the most successful film franchise based on a theme park ride.
True.
When you put it up against Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy, yes.
Are those the only two?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Like, if they wanted to do an entire movie based on the, like, cannibalistic mermaids and the fourth one, I'm down. I want to watch that.
Doesn't sound like that's going to happen.
No.
So Doc Rev in chat, I think, is with us. He says that the reboots and remakes are killing them. And I mean, it's fair. It's most of what we see now. It's what the successful stuff is the name recognition.
There's a ton of films out there that are underwatched, underrated, that could use a nice refresher that, you know, have developed over the years really good reputations, but just they're not untouchable. So I, you know, there's plenty of films that you could go back to the well and remake, but you're remaking stuff that we just saw like last year. I don't think that's necessary.
Fair enough. Other news, shockingly, apparently Avatar 2 and 3 have wrapped filming.
So they're a thing.
And they're already starting on 4 and 5. Sigourney Weaver had an interview. She is playing a different character than the first movie. And she will play that new same character in 2 through 5.
Okay.
At least the second and third films dealt with a lot of underwater stuff. So they had to do a lot of underwater shooting, which was a new experience for her.
I'm all about more Sigourney Weaver, but
yeah,
playing other characters in this, is it going to be like the twin sister of the person in the first movie or something?
She did not go into any real level of detail other than it's a different character than the first film. Now I will say this, I saw the first film, I think 2 or 3 times in theaters because I was fascinated by the tech behind it. So I saw it in different formats. I haven't seen it since. So I don't, did her character die or something?
I don't remember. Okay. Honestly, I don't think so.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I hated that movie, and at the time it came out, I was one of the very few, so I kept my opinion to myself. And
don't you wish you had a movie podcast at that time where you could have shared your opinion?
Oh my god, I would have ripped it a new one.
I think it's a beautiful film, and I think technically it's really impressive, but it's
literally just Fern Gully. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'd rather watch Fern Gully. So.
I agree.
Tim Curry sings in it. Why wouldn't you want
Robin
that?
Robin Williams is Batty? Come on.
That's perfect.
The Batty rap?
It's great.
So good.
And look, you know, we have our movie collection behind us over here. Fern Gully is on the shelf. Avatar is not. So what does that tell you?
A funny fact about it, they used the stereotypical papyrus font for Avatar until Ryan Gosling made fun of the papyrus font and how lazy it was, and now they've completely redone their logo.
They did, yeah. They got rid of the papyrus. It's fine, whatever.
If Ryan Gosling makes fun of you, you fix it.
You fix it.
That's true.
I think that's pretty much it, though.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of news. No, there was no Shazam Gate this week or last week. Or I mean, there really wasn't anything going on. I don't know what's going on. It's been quiet on the DC news front.
Yeah, it has been.
Ever since the Aquaman trailer, really.
Mm-hmm. DC released a picture today of the Monitor. He's a character I'm not very familiar with, but side-by-sides to comic book, it looks really good. So I'm on board. Yeah, I love the photo.
Yeah, there's been some other, you know, we like on the Titans show, they had the photo with the other dudes that are on the other show on
Doom
DC.
Patrol.
Yeah, Doom Patrol.
Right, yeah.
Robot Man or whatever. I don't know. I'm very unfamiliar with Doom Patrol, but they looked cool. Whatever the characters were, I'm not really familiar with them. But there's a crossover there. There's going to be some crosses. So we know that universe is the same, Titans and Doom Patrol.
That's something.
We don't know if Swamp Thing is in that universe or Young Justice or anything like that.
Right.
You know, we got a little more behind the scenes of Batwoman on the Elseworld crossover.
Alan Tudyk was cast as the Joker in the Harley Quinn cartoon, and I'm good with it. Alan Tudyk's a great voice actor.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I just wonder if he's going to go King Candy or Moana's Hey Hey or K2SO.
Well, he did go to Juilliard.
He did.
That's pretty funny. So I have a little complaint about the entertainment world. So we're in this... a new one. We're in this clickbaity world now, right? Where there's just clickbait headlines everywhere, and it drives me nuts. I really hate it. And the latest one is breaking news about trailers, and it was breaking. Marvel confirms an Avengers 4 trailer in 2018. That was the news article.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a thing. There was also the news article about Deadpool survived the snap, which is like, okay, he's not even in the same universe, so of course, you know, it didn't affect him.
But this was, so the headline was breaking Avengers 4 trailer confirmed. So I'm thinking, oh, like tomorrow? No, 2018. Of course. The movie comes out in May.
Yeah.
We're going to get a trailer for it.
Well, there was a lot of speculation that maybe we wouldn't get a trailer for it until after Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. That's entirely unlikely.
It does, but I mean, they didn't want to spoil anything. They've been very tight-lipped about, you know, these Avengers movies have been notoriously quiet.
But you could do some type of short teaser. I mean,
maybe,
you know, we got a teaser for The Force Awakens over a year ahead of time.
Sure, yeah. I don't think it's a time frame thing. I think it's that they don't want to spoil what happens in Captain Marvel or, you know, anything.
Sure, But we, I mean, at this point, like, you've seen Infinity War, right? You could show a shot of Tony and Cap or something like that, something dramatic with music. You don't even have to have any lines, and then just show us the name of the freaking movie. But if you're gonna, you can't wait until mid-March or the beginning of April to announce your film.
They've announced the film. I mean,
there's no title, there's no trailer.
Which, like, makes people speculate on every little thing, gives them news everywhere, every time even a little snippet of information comes out. I mean, I think there's an interesting strategy there if that was the way they were going, but they're obviously not. Kevin Feige said a trailer is coming out this year, so
fair enough. I guess so. The only other thing is Deadpool news, actually. So there is this PG-13 Deadpool movie. Based on what I've been reading, it is Deadpool 2. There was some speculation that maybe it would be parts of both or something like that, because they'd have to strip out a lot. It's more like
Deadpool 2.25, from what I understand. There's a bunch of new scenes they shot for it. And
they did. 2 months ago, they shot new footage for this movie, with at least Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. We don't know what else. And a soundstage and stuff. So
Brad Pitt's back as Vanisher.
Yeah. We can only hope.
I'm actually really looking forward to this, because this has never been done before. And I appreciate that they have found something totally new to do that works for the character. And it's very tongue-in-cheek, it's very meta and sarcastic, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the final product.
I probably won't go see it in theaters, so, I mean, you guys have that AMC pass where you get to watch as many movies as you want, so.
Three a week.
That's many as you want. That's pretty much it. So,
I'm just clarifying for anybody who doesn't
have fun,
know.
Let me know how it is, but yeah, I won't be seeing it in theaters. Okay. I just wasn't thrilled with Deadpool 2 anyway, so I don't really feel like devoting 2 more hours of my life to it.
Okay.
If you guys say it's good, I'll watch it when it comes
out. I just think this is unique. A movie, they've never done this with a movie before. I think it's a unique concept. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like. It's not so much a statement on Deadpool 2 as much as this idea. So.
Sure.
All right. Anyway.
All right. Okay. So that is going to wrap up news. Like usual, we're going to take a quick break. And, you know, like my sex, we'll be back in 30 seconds or less.
Do you like Star Trek? Because over at Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network, we absolutely love Star Trek. Join us every week with me, one of your regular hosts, Gregory Bosco, as we talk about your favorite characters, your favorite movies, your favorite episodes. We even respond to some of your comments on Twitter and Facebook, at least those that are appropriate for us to talk about online, every Friday. Red Shirts and Runabouts. See you next week.
Hello, we are back. And we are going to talk Daredevil. And I'm so excited. Let's talk Daredevil, guys. Daredevil season 3. Let's do it. Let's get right into this.
It's a show on Netflix.
It is.
There's 13 episodes.
13 episodes.
Watch it for $10.99 a month.
So, where do you want to start?
I don't know.
Do we want to do an overall kind of feeling about it? Yeah. Spoiler free, since we haven't spoiled anything yet.
I guess that's fair. Let's do it. Why don't you kick us off, Ryan?
Okay. I thought it was good. I don't think it was like the godsend that everybody was saying. I was the best Marvel cinematic anything that's ever been put out in the history of the universe.
Why do I feel like they did that because they don't want it to be canceled?
They started doing that. Like, people started talking about the first 6 episodes, but when they started sending those out for reviews and whatever.
Oh, right.
They started talking about those 6 episodes and saying it was the best season of Daredevil, the best of Netflix. And that was before, really, some of the Luke Cage and Iron Fist news came out. So wouldn't think that it was that specifically, but I mean, some of the fans that reviewed it and were saying that it might have been, for sure. I thought it was good, but and it was probably in my top half of Netflix show seasons, for sure. But it was good.
Yeah.
Not great.
Fair enough. So we have 3 seasons of Deadpool, 2 of Jessica Jones. Daredevil. 3 Daredevil, 2 Jessica Jones, 2 Luke Cage, 2 Iron Fist, and 1 Punisher.
And 1 Defenders.
Yeah. And 1 Defenders, right. Okay, so that's 11 seasons. Just checking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Right?
I mean, it was fine. Like, it's probably middle or top half if I were to rank each season. I think it might be the weakest of the 3 Daredevil seasons if I were to watch all 3 of them back to back. And I guess I would have to include Defenders in there too, since his story directly follows that. But I think my issue is Matt Murdock, for the most part, for most of the series, was boring compared to everything else that was going on.
You mean season?
Season, sorry. Okay. I've been watching a lot of British shows in the morning, and they call each season a series, so it just stuck with me for a second. But yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. I'm a little frustrated that all the side characters were far more interesting to me than Daredevil himself was for most of the season. And with Iron Fist, we kind of explained it away because it's about the Iron Fist, not about Danny Rand, right? But it's harder to do that here in Daredevil because, I mean, he's Daredevil.
Yeah.
And we'll get into even
Daredevil
more
about
it.
Like, a concept?
It's not a concept. And even in this one, I mean, you know, before we get into spoiler territory, you know, it's even more significant in this season than previous seasons. So,
well, I mean, it's not a spoiler to say there are two Daredevils in this season.
Well, no, that wasn't what I was going to say. Yeah, it's a story plot piece, so I don't want to... Gotcha. But yeah, so, you know, the side characters are wonderful, really, for the most part in this season. Vincent D'Onofrio is absolutely a spectacular actor. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for his Fisk, I'm not sure the show could have kept my interest. But he's just so compelling. He is so interesting that he just kept bringing me back in every time he was on screen. So, but yeah, let's dive in. This is your spoiler warning at this point. I don't think we'll really spoil anything from other Defender shows, but we might. So fair warning on that.
Yeah.
Definitely the three seasons of Daredevil. And probably Defenders. So, okay. So, okay. I found the sad, mopey Matt to be kind of just not interesting to
me.
And the first, like, three episodes were just kind of hard to get
through. Well, it was a real struggle because Charlie Cox is a wonderful actor.
Yes.
He really
and
is.
The dialogue they were giving was just bad. I think in the first episode he literally says fuck Job or something like that, and it reminded me of fuck Batman in the Titans trailer, where it's just like, and that wasn't just in the Titans trailer, that happened in the show too, but it was just,
are you 13? What are you?
Right. And bless Charlie Cox's heart, because he tried.
Yeah.
He really tried, and you could tell. And that was the only thing that made it bearable, I think. But yeah, it was just like Hot Topic emo Matt Murdock, like, I'm gonna get back at my parents, you know, whatever, man.
Well, even before that, you know, he's like, well, Matt Murdock's dead and I'm just the Daredevil now.
Right.
And he's like, he's totally just beat, and he should have been, like, a building fell on him.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, there's just this concept of him completely giving up everything, but at the same time only being Daredevil, which seems to be in conflict with the concept of giving up on everything.
Right.
So his character was so boring that episode 5 or 6 didn't include him until the last 30 seconds. And then you see him perched on his apartment building. Like, that, you can have an entire episode of the show without your main character. And then they do it again, episode 9 or 10, with Karen, and he's barely in it. So, you know, that's not a good sign. I mean, Big Bang Theory doesn't go one episode without Sheldon. So,
right.
You know, they know where their money is at. Like, I love Charlie Cox. I wanted this to be more of him and less of everyone else.
Potentially the best jawline on TV right now.
Yeah, it's really
top, good. Top five for sure.
Top cow, man.
No, I think it's a good point, because last season, one of my complaints was that it didn't feel like a Daredevil show because they focused so much on the Punisher and Elektra. So my hope was they were going to get back to what they had in season 1, where this is a Daredevil show and they're really focusing on him as Daredevil. And I found that everybody else was more interesting.
Yeah.
What Fisk was trying to do, what was going on with the FBI, what Foggy was going through, was just so much more interesting from a story level perspective. But I do want to say, I don't think any actor gave a bad performance. I think they all did great with what they had.
So let's talk about Sister Maggie, because we meet her in episode 1, and she is just a sassy ball of fire. And if I grew up Catholic, if I had known nuns like that, maybe I would have stuck it out a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, that whole church seems to be a lot more interesting and appealing to me as an atheistic Jew than what I normally see out of organized religion. So that was kind of cool. She's awesome. She's a great character. I did not actually see the twist coming.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not. You're not familiar with Daredevils in the comics?
I'm not. No, I started, there was like, they rebooted Daredevil a few years ago, and I read like the first like 3 or 4 episodes issues. It was very, very good, but I just dropped it. And so
here's the thing. You tend to have very selective memory. Last time when we talked about the Defenders, when we reviewed Defenders,
yeah, we said that
Ryan said that Sister Maggie, his mom, was going to be in there.
Yeah.
Well, I must have forgot. I'm not great with names, right? So I didn't know Sister Maggie didn't mean anything to me, really, and so I just didn't connect that name to a character.
I'm glad you remembered that, because I feel like one of us had brought it up at some point for sure, but you know, I didn't know for sure. Yeah, Sister Maggie was great. I mean, the actress that played her, I don't know her name, sorry, but she was great. I mean, I liked her character. I thought she was very interesting. That's going to be a running theme through most of this, because every character, really, other than Matt Murdock, was really phenomenal for the most part. Yeah, I mean, she was great. And the whole, like you said, the whole church, the father was great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I think we've said in previous seasons that we liked anytime Matt went to the church and talked to, gosh, what was the father's name?
Father Lanton.
Father Lanton. Anytime he went and talked to Father Lanton, that it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought the dichotomy between being Daredevil and the Catholic background was an interesting thing that it doesn't get explored in media very often, religion versus, you know, wanting to be something that makes a difference. So I always thought that was an interesting part of the character, and they definitely hit on that harder this season. So that part of Matt's journey was good for me. I mean, they, you know, really pushed the religious aspect.
They
Truth be told, they did a religious aspect in Iron Fist and Luke Cage, and all of the religious aspects were handled fairly well. You know, as people that aren't evangelical, they aren't Protestant, we're not Catholic, like, it's easy for us to understand the relationship each of these characters have with their, I guess, deity. We understand it. We get what they're going through just based on these scenes. So I really feel that if there's anything Marvel and Netflix does, it's the inner turmoil, it's the inner turmoil and the religious aspects of what they're doing, you know, the motivations and everything.
So. I want to say whoever the showrunner this season was has nothing. Zack Snyder has nothing on them for Jesus imagery, because literally the first shot of the first episode when Matt is like falling in the water of the building, he's like in the Jesus pose. And even Fisk at the very end when he's like, finish me, he's in the Jesus on the cross pose. And it's just like, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, just if you're in the background, you know, the crucifixion pose is very much a theme throughout the whole series. And it started to bother me at a certain point, because it's like, there's a, the imagery is not something that's supposed to be overdone like that. Like, I just feel like they overdid it. Maybe. There's a lot of it.
There was, I don't know. I didn't mind it so much in Daredevil, because he's supposed to be so connected to his religion that it seemed to gel a little bit better than
right.
Like,
but use other imagery, use different imagery other than just the crucifixion, because I mean that was the same pose throughout.
That's
almost
fair.
Every episode there was at least one person doing a crucifixion pose.
I mean, the Fisk one might have just been a coincidence.
Okay, I don't think it was.
Well, because he doesn't have his arms out; they're kind of down. He's more of just showing
straight out.
They were not straight at 90 degree angles. It was more of like him trying to, like, to show that he's not fighting back, rather than anything else. That may have just been a coincidence, but I get your point. It took a while for the show to get going for me, though.
That's why I'm surprised when people said like the first 6 episodes are some of the best I've ever seen. It's like really the first like 3 episodes weren't great, so...
No.
It did pick up.
Yes.
It did.
Once you started learning more about Dex, that's when it started picking up for me, for sure.
So, this season had the same issue that I had with Luke Cage, where I could cut out about 15 to 20 minutes of filler in each episode. There wasn't one single episode that needed to be cut, just a few things in each. What...
I actually think the Karen episode was completely unnecessary.
I mean...
That actually was one of my favorite episodes the whole season, to be honest with you.
Here's the thing. It's not a bad story, and it wasn't poorly acted or poorly written or anything like that. But what was important from that to the other 12 episodes did not need an hour dedicated to itself.
I mean, to be fair, it was only like 35 minutes of the Karen backstory, and then it went back to modern day. It wasn't a full episode.
But it was a full episode dedicated to that one thing, whereas if she could have explained the story in 5 minutes, right? And then you have the rest of the episode to do stuff.
I guess I didn't have as much of a problem with it because Karen has been a main character since season one, and we barely know anything about her.
Yeah.
And we know Matt and Foggy's almost their complete history together, and, you know, their all their schooling background and everything else. But Karen, we didn't know anything about her being a drug addict. We didn't know anything about her brother dying basically because of her. And
Well, I mean,
this is why we do TV shows instead of movies, so each character can be explored.
And it makes each character deeper, you know.
But I'm not sure that 2 seasons of not developing her character well is a good excuse for needing a full episode diversion from the rest of the story that's being told.
I'm not saying that she wasn't developed well. I'm saying that we didn't get as much backstory on her as we did the others. I don't think that episode should have been cut. I mean, especially after like a couple episodes prior, she made that phone call to her dad and asked to come home, and he's just like, no.
Right. But I mean, part of that though is the fact that they just didn't tell us anything before. Right. So I'm saying, like, I'm not sure that that's a good excuse. Like, they could have had any number of throwaway lines in the first 2 seasons about a previous drug addiction. That would have been easy for them to do. Right.
Which wouldn't have given as much depth as what we got from this episode.
Sure. But I'm saying you lay the seeds for it. Right. And then you don't have to spend an entire episode that's separate from the rest of the story. She's a very private,
closed off person.
Okay.
You know. Look, I'm just arguing for it. I thought it was interesting.
It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you. But I can understand how you know, it might not fit in for everybody.
It felt like an episodic TV show for a minute, right? And it's not an episodic TV show. And so it just felt really out of place for me. It felt like I wanted to know what was going on today with the story that was happening today. People are dying. There's lives on the lines. People's careers are on the line, right? Like, there's crazy stuff happening. And then all of a sudden we have to jump back in time X number of years for this other story that is kind of forced to be told because they've written themselves into a situation where we need to know this information right now. You know what I mean? Like, part of me thinks that, like, is any of this in her character in the comic books? Is
yes,
any of
this? But it wasn't, it's in a different kind of time order. Frame. Yeah. In this, the reason why Fisk finds out who Daredevil is because of her drug addiction and prostitution, if I remember correctly, at the current day, not in her past.
Okay.
So the drug addiction was in the comic books, but it was current day, and Fisk manipulated her based on that and the situation she was in. So currently,
that feels like they wrote themselves into a corner where they're like, well, we can't use that the comic book storyline. It's too late to make her an active drug addict or prostitute or something like that. Right? That's not going to work. So how are we going to do it? Well, now we need to do it in the past. Well, we've never shown anybody any of that before, so now we have to. That's all I'm trying to say. If that had been part of the plan, then they could have laid the seeds for that over the course of the previous 26 episodes.
Okay.
It just seemed kind of out of the blue, right? Like, it doesn't... All of a sudden, she's not just a drug addict. She's a heavy drug user, right? Like, big time. Hard drugs, heavy drugs, selling drugs at parties. Like, pretty hardcore. She leaves all of that behind somehow and ends up being a pretty reputable person, right? She's a reporter now. She's a trusted person. She's, you know, stable, and she lives on her own, and she doesn't have any of these problems. It just seemed kind of out of left field that she did for someone who doesn't know the comic books. If you know the comic books, you're kind of supported by the concept that her character's like that, but she's not on the show.
Right.
So
I felt the same way when that episode started. I felt like I don't really want a Karen episode right now. I mean, she's a good character, but I don't really need this. But then the episode was really well done and kind of hit the feels, and I was like, okay, I'm good with this episode. It was fine, and I liked that they gave her some backstory and you know, a past that's tragic. And you know,
maybe it would have been better earlier in the season, episode like 2 or 3, where like the main story isn't in full gear.
Right.
Right.
I could see that.
Maybe that would have been better, because that it would have been nice maybe to get a break from Mopey Matt to learn something about another character. But by the time, because Karen's episode 9, I think, right, or something like that. Like, by then, like, I want to see what's going to happen. You know, you that's where my focus is.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Okay. We've talked a lot about that one episode.
So let's move on. Let's move
on. Okay, so let's... we can talk about the FBI, because that tends to play a heavy part in this, and at least three or four individuals from the FBI are pretty big in this season. Or we can talk about Fisk next.
Let's do the FBI, because okay. Fisk, you know, we can talk about for a while, I think, so...
Probably, yeah.
Nadim was awesome. The yes. actor so was great, and the character was deep and flawed. And interesting, and I thought, you know, we all knew that he was probably gonna die.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that the season was not gonna end with him alive, but yeah, I loved the character, the actor killed it. It was very good. There wasn't a minute in there where I was like, oh, this is kind of rough acting. Where it was with some of the other FBI agents, not the main ones, but some of the, you know, normal people.
The boss, I felt like that.
Pretty, yeah, when they sat down at the table and everything, mm-hmm. and before,
yeah,
that yeah, he wasn't great. It was awkward. I was like, this guy not a great actor.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nadim was wonderful. He was a highlight of the season for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do... I thought they were going to do the tropey thing where, like, he fulfills the prophecy that she was warning him about, right? Where he actually does end up on the wrong side because of his debt. I'm like, don't do that. Yeah. That's boring. And they didn't. And I'm so glad that they did it the way they did, because it was far more interesting, and it makes him like a tragic hero, right? Like, he's human. He made some mistakes. And
you didn't really know which way he was going to go in the end. You know, you wanted him to... You knew that he was a good guy, but his family on the line and everything else, he... You know, that makes people desperate, so.
Yeah.
He was compelling. I wanted to know what happened with him. You know, from the moment you see him on screen, you kind of get the feeling that because he's not a main character, he's not even a secondary character, he's more like a tertiary, and they're spending a lot of time on him, you kind of feel like you're going to get emotionally involved just so they can kill him off later. And that's what they did, but it wasn't in the same way they've done that in the past, like Ben Urich, like mm-hmm. yeah. you know, he was in only a few episodes, about four or five, before they killed him off. And this guy was in every single episode. He dies in 12, but he's back in 13 on the video and everything. Yeah. So he got almost a full arc, and he might have been like maybe just my favorite individual story arc. It was kind of his show and what he went through, his journey, and I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
It reminded me of The Wire. I don't know if you guys
watched The Wire. I've wanted to.
But. Yeah, very similar to what some of the characters go through there.
I mean, part of me thought, up until, you know, Matt removes his mask and shows him legitimately who he is, up until that time, I actually thought that maybe they were trying to go, you know, a Commissioner Gordon kind of route, where in the next season they work together on stuff, and that's what they were trying to set up.
That would have been cute.
Obviously, you know, once he takes his mask off, you're like, well, you know, that's a bummer, but because I really liked him. It was just really cool to see this guy who loved his job, really loved his job, and wanted to continue to excel at it and grow at it, and loved his family and sacrificed everything he could, at least financially, for his family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's why he's in debt to begin with, right? And he's just constantly trying to make them happy.
And finding out that was Fisk that orchestrated that.
Like, that's got to be...
Orchestrated everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, like, it's just crazy when you think about it like that. And, you know, then his boss has an interesting line later in the season where, you know, she mentions, like, she was trying to protect him from that. And that's when she was, like, when she was giving him the BS about why he wouldn't get promoted... That wasn't the truth. The truth was to shield him from everything that was going on, because she didn't want him involved.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, she's not necessarily a completely horrible person either. She's stuck in the same situation where one of her kids was already killed.
Yeah.
She's got one left, right? Yeah. And I can't imagine what that must be like as a parent, to have one of your children killed by a mob boss and then basically have the other one threatened. I think you'd probably do quite a bit to protect that other kid, you know? So it was nice to show just a little bit of her humanity, that mm-hmm. she wasn't just straight up buddy-buddy with Fisk.
Nobody really was. I mean...
No, I mean, Dex wanted to be.
Everybody.
Yeah.
That's his thing. You aren't close to Fisk without him having something on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, do we want to talk about anybody else in the FBI? Do we want to talk about Dex?
Yes. Let's talk about Dex. I am very split on Dex in this season.
Why is that?
I think, yeah, I'm kind of with you just a bit. Go ahead.
So the actor was great. The character was really interesting. I love the idea of this kind of obsessive character who has mental issues that he's struggling with, and he's obviously in a dangerous field, and he's trying to stay on the straight and narrow, but it doesn't really work for him. I appreciated that. And he's looking for that kind of, you know, mentor who can keep him focused. But his abilities totally lost me, because he's supposed to be a normal human who is just really accurate.
Well, they don't really say that. Like, that was something that bothered me too, is they don't give a backstory, because he's obviously superhuman. There's normal humans can't do that.
That's part of the problem. But
they didn't give us the reason why. All they did was that one little backstory where he's throwing the baseball at the one spot on the wall. But a normal kid doing that for 6 hours a day is still not going to be able to do the same thing. You know, there's no amount of time doing that that's going to make you able to do that. So, yeah.
Well, even if let's pretend his superhuman ability is his accuracy.
Yeah.
Well, accuracy and power, strength, force are not the same thing, right? So some of the things that he did, some of the things that he threw and the way that he threw them at the distance that he threw them became comical in nature for me. Like, I actually laughed a couple of times, and that was not what your reaction was supposed to be.
I think the reason that it wasn't a problem for me was because if you think about being able to do something perfect every time, you stop thinking about that and you focus on adding things to that, right? Like, so sure. If I throw a baseball and I want it to hit someplace, it probably won't be full strength, because I know at full strength is not going to be accurate. But with him not having to worry about accuracy, assuming that's a superpower, he could put all his strength behind something that maybe I wouldn't be able to. And that would...
That's a fair point.
In my opinion, that's why it worked.
But. It worked for some of it, right? But like the big church fight, he literally threw rosary beads through windows at him. Individual beads from a necklace. That happened in the church fight scene.
Yeah.
There's no way for me to take that seriously. Like, whether or not it's his ability is not relevant. When I see that happen, like, okay, so he basically has the ability to what? Throw at the velocity of a bullet?
Sure. I mean, I guess. I mean, like, he does the same thing in the comic books, so I don't...
But again, like, I'm not reading the comic books, and the MCU doesn't require you to read the comic books, so if you're not going to explain to me where his ability comes from, or what his abilities even are, because you're not telling me. Like, there's not, like, show when me a scene where they're, like... When it was
the gun and the Albanians at the motorcade incident, you know, that was really believable. Then you find out he was a sniper in the military, and that's even better. You know, all of that was really great. See, his first appearance, it was a blink and you miss it. In the first episode, he's in the background of Fisk getting out of that prison and into the motorcade, and all he says is convict, and that's it. And you know, like, that his character was so great that I was able to overlook the weird inconsistencies with his abilities. You know, they borderline on superhuman, but
I think it crossed the border,
but... yeah.
Well, that's
the thing. I mean, there's no human out there in the history of the world that can instantly figure out the trajectory he needs to shoot a bullet at to get it to reflect into a window above him and hit somebody on it. Like, he's instantly doing this.
Well, that's the thing as an adult, in my opinion. The way he kills, like,
Deadshot. I mean, it's superhuman.
Yeah. And the way he kills his baseball coach as a child figures that out with a baseball seems even less realistic.
Yeah.
Right. And so the thing is, like, you could have even had some throwaway lines like, he's in the FBI, right? Show me a training center where instead of using a gun, he's throwing things, right? And they're clocking his velocity. And it's some superhuman velocity that he's throwing.
Well, I don't think he's, like, revealed to the FBI that he can... Like, I don't think it's a well-known fact that he can do this.
Right, okay, so he does it with Fisk then or something. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, there's no explanation for why he can do these things other than he has an obsessive personality. And that's not enough for me to make everything he does seem believable. Now, look, I am certainly not a physicist, okay? But there's just certain things, like in the newsroom fight scene, there's a moment where they're really close range with each other, and he throws behind him a pair of scissors that stick into Daredevil's chest.
Yeah.
He's throwing it, like, 6 inches. I'm not saying that it's impossible to impale somebody from that range, but it just doesn't feel realistic to me at all. You know,
okay. So I didn't have that same problem. I did with them not giving him, like, an origin, essentially. Because I did want to know where his powers came from. Find out if it's just supposed to be him being really good at this thing, or if it's supposed to be superhuman. Because it had to be superhuman.
They focused on the psychopath more than they did the abilities.
Right.
And in the end, I think that was the better move, especially with the way they ended the show. You know, hopefully a continuation, season 4, would mean we get some more of that background. Because I think when I weigh the two, the character was more important.
Sure. And I definitely agree. But there's, like you were talking about, there's 20 minutes in each episode that you can cut out almost. You know, they could have thrown an origin in there. How much time did they give to Daredevil's origin? Mm-hmm. You know, they had like 10 minutes where like he got the acid splash in his face. And then they show randomly some montages of him training with Stick throughout the series. Other than that, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, this is the first episode where we see that, you know, he spent time in the orphanage as a kid, that when his dad died, he came here. This first season, they talked about that.
Right.
So I think this show just, like, they just need time. They need more time than what they're giving, and maybe they're misusing time, too.
I think it's a misuse of time, because I still think 13 hours, or what ends up being about 12 hours, I guess, is a lot of time. And I think that the 3 episodes dedicated to Matt's mopiness could have been cut down,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that you're right, that focusing on the character of who Dex is super, super important. And the actor was very good, and I don't want to take any of that away. So if you're not going to give me an explanation for his abilities, you have to tone those abilities down a little bit. Because for me, as someone who didn't read the comic books, the only version of Bullseye I know...
Colin Farrell.
...is Colin Farrell. And keep in mind, I haven't seen that movie in 10 years, right? So I don't really remember, other than like his forehead has the Bullseye on it.
And he touched it and licked his lips all the time.
Right? Like, yeah. So for me, I'm like, well, that's probably not a great representation of the character. So I'm going into it relatively blind, you know? And I don't necessarily... Like, the only reason I knew that Dex was Bullseye going into the season is because everybody was talking about it, right? But if you don't know that, if you were able to go in blind...
They never call him that.
They never.
No, but he does wear the hat with the Bullseye on it.
Like, which was, that was cute. Episode. I like that, actually. I thought that was a cute nod.
Yeah, it didn't bother me, really.
But, like, you really don't know, right? Like, I don't know the character's real name, you know, or anything
so
like that.
Bullseye is one of the characters in Marvel that nobody can get a solid backstory on, and maybe that's the issue too, because they've had him go by Lester, they've had him go by Ben Poindexter, and he's gone by a few other aliases, and he does have a convoluted backstory because of that issue right there. Different writers get a hold of these characters and they want different things, so they just rewrite it and they're like, oh well, he's a villain, we can just do that. I mean, that's why the Joker has multiple names, and that's why Wolverine has multiple names, because people want different things. They imagine different backstories. So maybe that's the trouble, too. The source material is just not solid.
Fair enough.
I do want to say that he was... I didn't really worry... Like, Bullseye as a character, not really that scary, but the way they portrayed him here, I thought was really well done. I mean, in season 1 and season 2, we've seen Matt get his ass whooped a lot, right? A
couple times.
But we've never seen him so out of his element that he literally has no idea how to proceed. And in that fight in the newsroom, when he first runs into Bullseye, I mean, it was like, how the fuck do you fight against somebody like this?
Yeah.
Because he can literally grab anything and be deadly with it. Immediately, in 2 seconds, doesn't matter what it is. Whereas, you know, somebody trains with a sword their whole life, they're really good with a sword, probably not gonna be able to pick up a staff and beat you up with it, you know what I mean? Or this guy, it doesn't matter what it is, literally it's a weapon. And some of it was a little ridiculous, but I did like how when he went into his apartment, when they had been in there, he grabbed like 5 pieces of glass off the chandelier and took those with him. I thought that was a really clever way that he knows he can do this stuff. So he can grab literally anything. He's always aware of what's around him that he can use. And so that made him a really interesting character. And when I saw it, it was more likened to like a D&D or video games for me, where it was like you have a melee character fighting a ranged character.
Mm-hmm.
And how does a melee character deal with that?
Close range.
They have to close the gap.
Yeah.
And but the ranged character knows that they have to close the gap. So he tries to get the gap always there. And they actually did a really good job of the fight choreography on that, showing Matt really trying to close the gap and Dex trying to not let him close the gap, because mm-hmm. they both know where they have their advantages.
The ropes were a good touch, too. Adding ropes were cool. Some more punch to the punch was good.
That was interesting.
And they did a good job showing Matt or Dex get his ass whooped by Daredevil up close. Mm-hmm. Daredevil's obviously the better hand-to-hand fighter, and Dex realized mm-hmm. that. So I've talked before about how in fight scenes it's really important for me to be... have it move forward the character or the plot, one of the two.
Otherwise it's just unnecessary violence.
It's just action for the sake of action. And almost every fight in the show really did have something moving forward in the fight, which I thought was really good.
And it is a good example of the hero and the villain not being carbon copies of each other.
No, right? But the other problem with it is they took away the powers, which that's a tropey thing that they do with superheroes. On the first three episodes, he's like, oh, main character lost his powers, like Iron Man 3. They took away his powers and, you know, he's got to use his wits or whatever.
But that only lasted a few episodes.
It did.
And then he's fine again, right? So there were no real consequences of that.
Right, which made it kind of a waste. I hated that they started the season off that way, because it's like... Okay.
I thought it was going to continue. I thought it was going to be a thing where it was going to be a problem when he goes up against Fisk or Bullseye or whoever, like, a real villain is.
In the past, like, Iron Fist, he went without that fist for half of the season. They really dragged that on. And Daredevil was up and punching a bag by the end of the first episode. And, you know, Sister Maggie says that he laid in that bed for 2 months. So,
to be fair, Iron Fist is supposed to be a skilled martial artist with or without the fist. Whereas Matt Murdock, if he can't see or hear anything really, then that basically completely gets his martial arts experience and everything else. There's still nothing he can do.
He always says that, like, it sharpened his senses. Like, why not talk about the smell thing? Like, I know
you can smell the poop in somebody's colon from 2 weeks ago or something.
Well, he can smell, like, where the food's from and stuff like that. They have little throwaway lines. But that's the thing is, though, like, you're right. Like, as Daredevil, if he can't hear, then he's he can't do any fighting. He can't even practice law, right?
They touched on that with the Punisher, too, in season 2, when he got shot in the head or whatever, and it, like, rang his bell,
So they've already covered it,
yeah,
right? And so since they've already covered it, and it clearly didn't actually have any real consequences in this season, then why even do it? Just have it be X number of months later, and he's a little bruised and beat up, you know, but he's relatively healed, and he's ready to go. Like, then you can cut out
Because Matt Murdock can never be relatively healed. Punisher.
You know what I mean,
they
though.
Can't be. It's impossible.
So but even like, the worst beating he gets in this season, he never gets as bad as he was at the beginning of the season. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, like, they burn maybe even more than an episode's worth of content with him sulking around all beat up for what ends up not really doing anything.
I gotta say, the scene where he takes, like, that bulb and sticks up his nose and shoots it, and it just shoots the nasty crap out of
the neti pot. Oh my God. Yeah.
Blood. I was like, that is. But then that fixed him. He's good to go.
He's fine now.
But yeah, that was nasty.
Yeah. I agree. Now, so Doc Rev had a comment about the prison fight, that Matt could never have taken the whooping he got in the prison fight.
He also said that there's no way Fisk could have taken all those shards of glass. Like, even though these guys are...
I think Fisk has superhuman durability. Like, let's just get real. They all do, because Punisher could not have survived his season if he didn't have superhuman durability. Daredevil would have died multiple times over.
Ray had an interesting point, though. I think Fisk's suits are not normal suits either.
They're not. They're lined. Right. They show that in the first season.
Right, okay.
Melvin...
But he took off the jacket and gave it to Vanessa.
Yeah, but I mean, the vest and stuff could still have...
No, because they went right in him.
Oh, did they?
Like, he threw one or two, and they bounced off. Then he took off the jacket, gave it to Vanessa, and then he took more to the side.
Okay. Well... That prison fight scene, I'm assuming that's the scene people are saying is now the best of the hallway fight scenes in Daredevil.
Yes, that would be the one.
Do you guys agree with that?
I don't think it's better than the one in the first, but it is impressive that it was one shot.
Yeah, I had a talk with Doc Rev about this, and I think from a technical perspective, it's probably the most impressive. It might be the most impressive shot from any MCU and ever. In terms of what actually went into making that shot happen. Because it's 11 minutes with no cuts.
No cuts.
But as far as a fight scene, Yeah, I prefer the season one hallway fight and then the season two Punisher fight in the prison, as well as the one where he's in the hallway with the chain, Daredevil in the hallway with the chain, when the Punisher's unconscious on the elevator and he's got the biker gang coming up. I think both of those fight scenes all three of those fight scenes were better than this one. But from a technical standpoint, as a technical achievement, it was pretty impressive for sure.
Yeah,
that's how I differentiate.
I agree with you completely. Because I was watching, like, they're not cutting.
Well, there was a couple spots where it looked like there could have been a cut, and you couldn't really be sure. But they said that they used one scene. They did plan it, so there's a couple spots
where they could cut if
they had to, and the whole shot didn't turn out as well as they wanted, but they didn't cut at all.
So. And that is impressive. And, you know, I go for the technical stuff. So I truly appreciate the amount of work that must have gone into that between choreographing it, practicing it, all the extras, the guys who have to come in randomly at the right time. Like,
the effects, all the smoke bombs and the lighting and... Yeah.
I mean, look at, like, Creed, for example. One of the most impressive parts of that movie to me was the no-cut boxing match.
Mm-hmm.
That scene was nowhere near as technically difficult as what they did in this show.
Yeah.
I still think that the the Creed fight scene was probably more enjoyable for me. This one, the only thing that kept me going was, man, this is impressive. How long are they going to go with it? Because the fighting wasn't really that great. In fact, I thought most of the choreography for the whole season was the like up close fights were kind of lackluster. You could see that they were throwing punches above people's heads or, you know, to the side of their heads, and people were jumping when they got hit really hard. You know, you could tell that easily on a lot of them.
It's hard to compare it though to a movie like Creed, because I mean it's a big blockbuster film, and that was like the big title fight, you know.
Well, that's why it's impressive that the show did it better in terms of the technicality, because, you know, they know they don't have the budget to do something like what Creed did,
right?
So, you know, they can afford to hire better fight choreographers for right. Creed than they can for Daredevil, probably.
Well, and Creed also only has to worry about boxing,
right? Which is probably easier to choreograph, I imagine. Maybe more difficult to choreograph, interestingly.
Right. But like, I mean, there's only so many things you can do because there's rules versus like this prison fight scene. Pretty much anything goes, and there's any number of people involved at any time. And,
right.
You know.
I do want to say that something that really bothered me in this show that hasn't bothered me, I know you've brought it up before, but it hasn't really bothered me in any other show, was where was everybody else? Because they make a point in one of the episodes to show every single news station covering Fisk and Daredevil killing people and all this other stuff. And when you show that this is everything on the news, you assume it's through all New York, because Hell's Kitchen doesn't have its own news network.
Hell's Kitchen is not a city. It's a neighborhood in New York.
So when you show that every single news station is covering this, what the fuck is the Punisher doing, right? His buddy Red is getting, you know, killing people. Maybe he's like... Good on you, buddy.
We spent the first three episodes of Iron Fist with Danny Rand bitching about how he needed to do this for Matt. And Danny's not going to show up and be like, Matt's alive and killing people?
Right.
Like,
I mean, Iron Fist,
come on.
That's the only one you could kind of explain away, because you might be out overseas or whatever with Ward at that point. But then Colleen, what's she doing? Because they're showing that she's, you know...
Well, that's the problem.
Or what's Luke Cage
what's
doing?
Misty
He's
doing?
A crime boss.
But what's Luke Misty makes... doing? She should be
that's
there.
True
She's
too.
NYPD.
Jessica Jones.
Misty, Colleen, and Jessica should be there. Luke, I get, because we leave him off with, don't come into Harlem. That's my territory. Yeah. He doesn't leave Harlem. If you don't come into Harlem, we're cool. That's his philosophy where we left him. Danny very well could be out of the country, because we don't exactly know when this takes place.
Punisher?
But
there's not really an explanation for that.
No.
Right?
Like, they do name drop Jessica Jones, though, randomly.
They do. In the
last
episode?
Nice. I was okay with it, because it didn't feel forced to me, really, like it would have if they had just jammed it in somewhere else, you know?
But that is a problem, though, because we're especially, like, okay, the MCU is one thing. Thor, you know, with Thor the Dark World, London's being destroyed, you can ask where people are. But New York is a small place.
Yeah, and there's four or five major superheroes, or six if you count Misty Knight, and, you know...
Most of which actually have superhuman abilities at this point.
Right.
Right? Colleen and Misty both have superhuman abilities now.
Right.
Right? The Punisher, maybe not, but...
Superhuman durability, for sure.
It's got superhero guns. So. Yeah.
But Jessica Jones clearly has abilities, you know. So,
it and just... she's an investigator, so she should have been able to figure out that this wasn't Daredevil in like 2 seconds. You know, mm-hmm. She just literally tails him. He's obviously not hard to figure out because the random nun, Matt's mom, saw him walking away and could have easily, if she just followed him a little further, gone, oh, he's getting into an FBI van. You know,
weird.
How crazy is that?
All right, so let's move on to Fisk.
Yeah, we need to talk about Fisk. He was, again, the best part of the season.
Yeah, Vincent
unrecognizable D'Onofrio. For me as Vincent D'Onofrio. He became like he was Vincent D'Onofrio, but he became Fisk. I wasn't seeing Vincent D'Onofrio playing Fisk. It was literally I was watching Kingpin. And it was awesome.
There are a couple times where his voice sounded like Edgar from Men in Black because he played Sugar. That.
Yeah. Water.
There's a couple times.
God, I can't believe that's the same person.
But, God, yeah. He was frightening. Like, every episode they escalated just how deep his pocket went, just how far his reach was.
Far ahead he's thought. That's what was impressive to me because he's... You know, five steps ahead of where you think he is. You know, you might think he's 3 steps ahead of you, but in reality, he's probably 5 or 6 steps beyond that with contingencies for each one. I mean, it's incredibly frightening. How do you beat a person like that? I really felt Matt's, Foggy's, and Karen's frustration with that because it's very...
So, here's the end. Like, the end is him fighting, and Matt has him up against the ropes, but we've seen this guy before. We've seen him fight. I felt like it was the Obi-Wan Darth Maul fight all over again, where for no reason at all, this character wins. Like, just...
Well, Daredevil had the high ground, so...
Yeah, that definitely is the reason why.
It was just he gave up a little sooner than I expected him to, and it ended a little sooner. Like, I thought that Matt was going to walk away with, broken ribs or something, and
the fight definitely didn't go the way I anticipated. I was a little confused by what he wanted Dex to do, what Daredevil wanted Dex to do, right? Because he basically convinces Dex to go hunt down Fisk,
yeah,
right? But then continues to get in Dex's way the whole time.
Well, because he doesn't want Dex to actually kill Fisk. I mean, maybe he thinks he does, but I think that his subconscious is telling him, I don't really, you know what I mean? He says, he's telling everybody, I'm going to kill Fisk, right. But he's not a killer.
But he sends Dex to this highly populated area, right, where he's going to hurt people, there's no question, and then proceeds to have to, you know, do his best to stop Dex from hurting people. It just seemed like a way to convolute the whole thing.
It would have been better had he also protected Dex from Fisk. But he didn't, and Dex got his back broken.
Right. I mean...
Which was interesting to see. I wasn't sure if they were going to go that route, but I thought that fight scene, yes, there were some motivational things that were a little questionable. It worked for me in the end because I was like, all right, it's fine.
It was an entertaining scene, watching the three of them fight each other.
With all different fighting styles.
So good.
And then with Daredevil having the block objects, you know, and things like that. I thought that was, it was cool. It was a well-done scene. It was the motivations that were weird. But the scene itself is really cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was really well done. Fisk is great. I wish that they had given some more of the FBI reveal earlier because it seemed impossible that Fisk had this whole like bunker built in the hotel that somehow nobody knew about.
I don't know if he built that. Well, you know what, but that's there. He had the blueprints and knew that.
Well, that was the thing. So like when you're introduced to all of this, it's just like, how did the FBI not know that was there? Right. And it just seemed impossible that all these people are being duped. And it took a lot longer than I feel it should have for them to be like, okay, fine, the FBI knows. You know what I mean? Because it just didn't seem believable that he was pulling a fast one on everybody. And he wasn't. It's because they were in on the whole thing. But by then, it's not so much a twist anymore as much as an explanation.
Everybody that works for him is clearly on a need-to-know basis. And you saw that because the... woman, I forget her name, but her motivation and everything, like, she doesn't know everything. Nadim doesn't know everything. Dex doesn't know everything.
Dex barely knows anything.
Right.
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 The scene that they did with Fisk and Bullseye's backstory, we didn't touch on that. It was almost a whole episode devoted to that. I thought that was really beautifully shot and interestingly shot, where Fisk was a part of the scene, and it was shot in like a cinema light type, like he was, you know, I don't know. It was a really unique way of doing that. And I definitely applaud them for doing it, because you see so many, you know, flashbacks and things like that. It starts to get a little stale. But the way they did it was very, very interesting. And I was compelled by
that. They don't get to be as artistic as you'd think throughout these shows. Right. They're still a formula they have to follow. But
this one felt like there was some art to certain some of the fight scenes. And also, yeah, that. And I thought Karen's episode was also kind of artsy, in my opinion. But
it's definitely a mechanic I've seen before, but it's been a really long time that I can't even remember.
And certainly not in the MCU.
But yeah, so it was super cool to see that, because it is a nice change of pace from the normal flashbacks.
And it gives D'Onofrio a chance to just chew the scenery and, you know, go all in, you know, as Fisk.
Because it shows his intelligence at a different level. He's able to just read through and listen to a few tapes. You know, remember, Dex has most of the tapes.
Right.
And Mercer gave some to the files, but Dex has most of them. And he was able to figure out every little thing, just how Dex...
how to manipulate him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good.
Yeah.
No, that was a very cool
I didn't mean to jump
collection.
Back, but I feel like that should have been touched
on. We're talking about Fisk, and I think, I mean, it's hard to separate stuff. I think that's a really important collection of scenes I had kind of forgotten about, unfortunately. So,
one thing we also didn't touch on that I really wanted to bring up before I forget is the audio in the show. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the when Matt in the first few episodes is having his hearing loss and things like that, the scenes where it's first person with him, if you're listening on headphones, you only can hear it out of one ear.
Yes.
The way they did the stereo was to basically cripple you like Matt was.
Right.
Also, when Dex was in his freakout modes, you always had that residual, like, white noise going on constantly. And so I thought that it really kind of lets you get into the character a little bit more and feel what the character is feeling. And they did Dex's throughout the whole season.
They did.
So you really got this crazy vibe, partially because of that.
Each episode, the more he unraveled, the louder it got. So that, like, what was ambient in episode 2 is now at the forefront, like full on tinnitus in your ears, and you're just as annoyed as he is.
Yeah, and you really start to feel it. And yeah, I thought that was something that I haven't seen in any of the other Netflix shows, and it was something unique, especially like the deafness on one ear. You know, you don't I don't know. I thought that was a really cool way to connect with characters that isn't explored very often.
Yeah, I especially liked what they did with Dex. I thought that was super cool. Because he is unraveling, right? That's the whole concept, is he is too noisy in his own head, you know? And that's what they were going for. I thought it was really cool. So let's see. We have some other things.
I want to talk about how everybody... like, nobody seems untouchable to Fisk except for Vanessa. Like, no harm will come to her except for the Holocaust survivor owner of the rabbit in a snowstorm. That scene was beautiful. I love that she didn't back down. I love that she told him exactly what was on her mind, and she was like...
And he respected that.
Because he doesn't respect everything and everyone, and they are just pawns, and, you know, he doesn't care if you have a family, he doesn't care your backstory, but this woman is the one exception, which is why when Dex killed her, even though it was off screen, and thank goodness for that, because that might have been a little too emotional for me to deal with, but... I'm surprised that he didn't have Dex killed, like, right then and there, just to be honest. But
yeah, I mean,
I think he just saw that Dex was more of an asset than, you know, just killing him off.
See, I feel that Dex doing that didn't do a single thing for the story at all.
Yeah, I mean, all it did was serve to piss Fisk off, and
but then nothing comes of it, though.
Not really. No, I mean, they fight in the end, but it's, you know, and then maybe that gave him a reason to fight back, like break his back instead of, you know, just
I mean, maybe. I mean, he does bust into his home and attack his wife, right? So on his wedding night, like, I feel like that's all he needed to want to kill him, you know?
Well,
and so
not only that, but he made a spectacle of the wedding, too. Right. Like, he interrupted the reception and he brought a dead body with him in the FBI van.
Well, I don't know if Fisk knew all that stuff necessarily. Because he was upstairs.
He probably didn't know about the dead body, but he definitely knew about the interruption at the reception.
Oh, right, yeah. But, like, so my problem is that they have the scene with the woman, and it's an incredibly well-done scene, and it shows us a part of Fisk that we don't get to see a lot, a very measured, level-headed side of Fisk that does exist because of Vanessa, right? So it's a powerful scene. And then they kind of just undo the whole thing for no real payoff. So, like, if you're gonna...
It was a payoff more for Bullseye's character, yeah, I think it was supposed to show he'll do literally anything to make Fisk happy. And
the thing is, though, we have no way to know that Dex had any clue who that woman was. From his perspective, it was, we've offered this woman a bunch of money, and she won't take it, so I'll just take the painting.
Yeah, that was
right?
it.
That was right.
It.
So, but that doesn't change the character at all, because he's already killed a bunch of people. If he knows that she's a Holocaust survivor,
point,
he makes that conscious decision and he still does
he
it.
He wanted to get back in with Fisk because Fisk was starting to like ignore him and letting him go because Fisk was realizing that he doesn't need him anymore. You know, he's good on his own and he's gotten what he wants. So I think that was his way of getting back in. And his conversation with Vanessa about how he's the new James Wesley was creepy. He was so creepy.
I did like that we finally got the payoff from Karen killing Wesley too, and that came finally had consequences.
Right. Yeah.
Because that was season one, like mid season one that happened. So
and yeah. It goes to show you how closed off of a person she is, because she insists on having attorney client privilege before she tells Foggy.
Yeah. Even though they're like besties.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she didn't murder somebody, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And he wants to be a district attorney, so that would put him in a bad position.
True.
You know, so she's also trying to be a good friend in that moment as well. Yeah. You know, so. I thought that, like, the very end with Bullseye during the operating scene.
Yeah, can we talk about that?
What?
Can we talk about that?
Yeah. I thought that was really stupid.
I don't think there's a lot to say about it, really.
I thought it was just stupid.
I think it's for somebody, if people had read the comic books, that's all it was. And...
I mean, so he broke...
I didn't like the Bullseye appearing in his eye.
Yeah, that was weird.
Actually wish they would have name dropped it. Literally said the word. So, I've been in an OR. I've seen how surgeons work, and I know how they talk, and they get really braggy when they're doing surgery, and, like, good things happen, and, you know, they're on their way to doing it correctly. I was really hoping that he would have just stayed asleep and not woken up from the anesthesia, and they just would have said, like, Bullseye and panned out. It would have meant that, like, they did a really cool thing on his spine. And I know that's almost just as cheesy, but I think, you know, a patient waking up in the middle of a surgery and his eye is now glowing in a Bullseye just seemed less realistic.
I just don't think that either one is really needed. Like, if they were going to do anything, then they could have just literally called him Bullseye. They call Kingpin because it's a code name, and that's how everybody refers to him.
But
they
could literally do years.
Sure, but they literally could have just said, you know, Bullseye.
Yeah.
Or he could have thrown something that said Bullseye.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been
better. I like Ray's idea better than what we got. Because, yeah, first off, the waking up during surgery. His spine is open.
Yeah.
And he wakes up. Okay. Why? All right. Number one. Then number two, the eyes.
Yeah.
Like, what about breaking his back changed his eyes?
Well, they're giving him in the comic books, adamantium, probably vibranium or some, you know, something like that, spine reconstruction. So, you know, we know that vibranium has weird properties in the MCU.
Yeah.
It can literally do anything you want it to do, including give Bullseye eyeballs.
Right. Like, it's just... It took a character that had some really off-the-wall moments for me and just cemented that they really didn't know how to write the character. That they didn't know what to have him do. When he's Dex struggling with his mental issues, he's brilliant. And then when he has to be Bullseye, it was just kind of lame for me most of the time.
Minus the sniper scene in the beginning.
Yes.
Like the motorcade scene was great.
The motorcade scene was great. Any of the hand-to-hand combat stuff with Matt was great, you know, but any major action sequence other than that, there was something that lost
It was
me.
The church and the bulletin. where his powers were off. Where
see, they... I like those both of those scenes, so I'm going to politely disagree with you and say that they were good. He was embracing what he was thought Daredevil should be in this instance, and you know, he put on a suit. He's a different character at that point.
Oh, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about his abilities, like the throwing.
No, I like his abilities.
Throwing of the beads on the necklace. And...
I had no problem accepting that he was a super. Once they showed that he was doing superhuman things, that's fine. He's a superhuman. That's in my mind done. They don't need to show it at that point. If they did, it would have been great. But
okay.
Sorry, I thought that last scene was very akin to the Iron Fist ending scene where you just randomly have Danny Rand with chi bullets and out of nowhere.
But you know? The difference there. Well, first off, I thought that scene was a little over the top for Iron Fist, and Iron Fist is more lighthearted and magical than Daredevil is, right? Yeah. So you've taken Daredevil, which is arguably the grittiest of the Defender shows, and done that. And then, so it's even more of a stretch. Okay. No? All
right. It was cheesy. I thought the spine thing was cooler as a reference to the comic book than the bullseye eyeballs.
Right, yes. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, look, if you want to show that he's not dead, then yeah, you don't have to actually show his eyes open. They're doing surgery on him.
Yeah, just show the heart monitor. That's all it needs.
All right, so final thoughts.
That must have been really hard for you.
That's what she said?
That's Dex's big thing that he says all the time.
Which I actually thought was great. Yes. That was a recurring thing. Overall, I liked it. I still think season 2 and 1 were better, personally.
Yes, I agree.
But... It was probably top 5 seasons of shows for me. So,
fair enough. Ray?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that I still prefer the first season the most, but Daredevil is still one of the more interesting
consistently
shows.
Good, yeah. I think, than all the other shows. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think every episode deserves a 9.5 rating on IMDb. I don't know what that's about, but I'm good with it. They're continuing Matt and Fisk's arc very well, and each episode escalated in interest, escalated in tension, and that was important for me. You know, Fisk is frightening, and I felt that, so... Overall, I'm happy with it. I just wish that Matt had been done better.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the side characters are so good. Everybody is so interesting in this, you know, whether it's, of course, Fisk or Dex or Foggy or just so many, Nadim, just so many cool characters in this season makes me want to like it more than season 2 because there's just so much more going on. It seems much more complex of a story. But... I don't know. I'm not sure yet, to be totally fair. I don't know where to rank it because I haven't seen Jessica Jones, and that's not fair. And I've only seen a few episodes of Punisher, so not really fair to rank it with those or not. But what do you guys think about the possibility of a season 4? Do you think it's going to get it, or do you think Netflix is trying to move on?
I think Netflix is trying to move on.
Yeah, I agree.
It's unfortunate, but... And I bet Punisher season 2. Punisher is probably the hardest one for me because of the Netflix shows is my favorite character. But because it's an adult, they can't move this to the other network.
No, it's not happening.
You know, at least that character is making him something.
Right.
You know, on Netflix. I mean, I don't know. I know Netflix doesn't care, but it's frustrating. We're finally getting a Punisher that 90% of Punisher fans really love. And they're just going to kill it because Netflix needs to control all its properties.
Well, I mean, I think that's not necessarily a fair way of framing it. I mean, we don't know how much money they have to pay Marvel.
Oh, I'm sure it's a lot.
You know, so it may not be profitable, like legitimately. You know, and Netflix certainly doesn't have a reason to produce a non-profitable
show.
You know,
they keep saying that companies like Netflix and Facebook, you know, they're worth billions, but it's all just theoretical. Like, they're strapped for cash all the time, and so I don't know.
Well, Netflix, though, broke expectations for new subscriber numbers. They actually bring in physical hard cash on a regular basis.
Just 2 years ago, they were saying that they don't turn a profit. So, what turned around in 2 years?
I'm not saying that they completely turned around. I am saying that they're considered the largest, like, producing...
Distribution
sure. company, right? So that means something. They're making some money, you know. And if a thing like Marvel is going to charge them extra, then it would make sense for them to cut that loose because that is a cost they don't need to incur.
Yeah.
You know, if they make their own stuff, Lost in Space and Stranger Things and, you know, that type of stuff, then they're paying themselves, you know? So if they aren't profitable, that this would be the appropriate move to help make them profitable.
Okay.
So.
That's that then.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's it then for our talk on Daredevil season 3.
Absolutely. That finishes up. Next week is our review of Bohemian Rhapsody. So go check that out this weekend. Come talk about it with us on Tuesday. We're all looking forward to this. We don't usually make time to review biopics, but we're big Queen fans. So this is kind of important to all of us.
So we have our Screen Hero Awards.
We do.
Going on. Almost every night, we will be posting voting categories for various movies, TV shows, that sort of thing. You can go out to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and vote for these things. Vote for your favorite in these categories, and we will be talking about them in December for the 3rd annual Screen Heroes Awards.
Woo!
So go to @HeroesPodcasts on Facebook or Instagram, or @ScreenHeroesPod on Twitter to go vote on those things or follow us. Ryan, where can people find you?
Buster Props everywhere.
Ray?
In a well. No, I'm Siren Ray. On all the handles, on everything. Find me there.
And I'm the Star Trek dude. We will catch you guys next week.
Bye, guys.